is Behind the News live on Radio Central Cape Coast, Volta Star Radio, that is in the Volta region, Sunrise FM in Koforidua, and Ubuntu 96.5 FM. As usual, we encourage you to be very active listeners. You can send in your text to 026-441-8767. And we want to move on to our first story. The alleged bribery of some journalists in the Upper East region by the government is not dying down immediately. As if that is not enough, the politics of insults which attracted condemnation is still having a free day. The Deputy Minister of Tourism and the Communication Director of the MPP are the latest to have engaged in verbal assault on the airwaves. The media are expected to be watchdogs in the community, especially in the fight against corruption. How will the alleged bribery of some members of the Inki fraternity affect the national crusade against corruption? We have on the line now Executive Secretary of the Ghana Integrity Initiative, Vitus Azim, as we expand on the issues. You are welcome, sir, to Behind the News.
Yeah, thank you.
Yes, you are an active corruption campaigner. Are we properly handling the bribery allegation against the journalists, the alleged?
I don't think we are properly handling the allegation. You see, in this country, anything that you say with regards to corruption, people tend to always sort of politicize it. This is an allegation against a particular person. If he thinks it's not true, why don't we allow the matter to be investigated by an independent body to come out with the findings? But this is not the first time that this allegation is made, not only under this government, but under all previous regimes. There have always been allegations of government functionaries trying to influence the media in various forms to sort of do some propaganda for them. And especially as we are approaching 2012 election, it is important that we look at these issues from a nonpartisan perspective.
Yeah. You are talking about nonpartisan perspective, but the media is also called upon normally to hold people responsible. So we are asking the question, are you against the way it was put out in the public domain? Is that the best way to do it?
I am not against the way it was put in the public domain. If those who put it in the public domain had enough evidence, were convinced that this was actually what happened, they have the right to put it in the public domain, so that those who are accused can come out and defend themselves. And then, if that is not satisfactory, there are appropriate institutions that should investigate these issues. We have the National Media Commission, and we have other independent state institutions that should investigate this. We have even the GEA, which has its reputation to protect. So I think it's okay to put in the public domain if only the people who put in the public domain were convinced that, yes, this was what actually took place.
Yeah. Are you then saying that perhaps when it comes into the public domain without all the necessary supporting documents, it may be poisoning the well?
I'm not talking about documents. It's not in all cases that you can get supporting documents. Mm-hmm. But at least you, the one making the allegation, should be convinced that, yes, you think that this is true. You have some form of evidence to be able to make this allegation. Because, you see, the media plays a very important role of informing, educating, and entertaining the Ghanaian public. And especially when it comes to party politics, and we are approaching 2012, it is important that they are sure of what they put out there, or at least are convinced in their own conviction that there is some truth in what they are putting out there.
Yeah. So what is the signals, especially when media people are being mentioned in things like this?
It's very unfortunate. It's a very sad situation because, you see, the media can influence a lot of people in the way they think, in the way they address certain issues. So a lot of people rely on what they hear from the media. So we want to be convinced that what we hear is the truth and that this can be proved. It can be investigated and proved. And so what the information that is being put out there, those that are being accused should allow the investigation to go forward. Those that are accusing should be able to bring out the information, the evidence that, yes, this is what actually happened and we found it, this is true.
Yeah.
But then it should be possible to allow a neutral body. We have the media, National Media Commission. Mm-hmm. Why are they not saying anything about it?
Mm-hmm.
Why are they not taking steps to investigate and settle the issue?
Yeah. But Mr. Azim, whose responsibility is it? Is it the one accusing, the one making allegations, who should provide proof, or the one being accused? This question keeps going up and down.
Well, I think that because we are talking about transparency and accountability, if you are accusing somebody, you have a responsibility to be sure that you have some evidence to support your accusation. But the one that is also being accused has a responsibility to come out and say, no, it's not true. I'm not. This is not a situation. This is the evidence. I was not involved. So both sides, yeah, it's not one person's responsibility. We should all be able to come out and say, these are the facts. I have this meeting for this. These were the issues. This is recorded. The other person says, yes, I have this information. It was recorded. You said this and this. But, I mean, and the most important thing is that we should have certain senior citizens of the two main parties in this country who can come out and say that, look, these young people, this what you are doing is wrong. Let's do it this way. And the senior citizens are keeping quiet.
Okay.
And we politicize everything. So our democracy that we boast about doesn't seem to be making headway.
So, Mr. Vitus Azim, you've mentioned one critical issue that seemed to be warring against the fight against corruption, that is the politicization of issues, when it may be right or perhaps even when it is wrong. Do you see us making a headway in the campaign against corruption if this will continue to be the trend?
We are not making a headway against corruption, especially with regards to political corruption, because even when an individual is caught in a dark case, somebody says, oh, it's because he belongs to Party A. That's why people are saying that he's involved in drug abuse or drug trafficking. That should not be the case. This is an individual. The fact that he or she belongs to Party A or Party B should not be an issue. We should be able to say, look, if this person is accused, let the state authorities investigate the matter and come out with the facts. Unfortunately, this is not happening. And so it is either NDC or NPP. I see Ghana comes only second to two parties. Ghana must come first. Because if there's no Ghana, you cannot claim and want to fight to rule this country. So we have to allow Ghana to be first, and then the parties will be second. So when there is a case, let's investigate the case, let's allow the authorities to investigate the case and come out with the facts.
I want to thank you very much for your time this evening, Mr. Vitus Azim.
You're welcome.
That's the Executive Secretary of the Ghana Integrity Initiative. But Suleiman Abraima is the Deputy Executive Secretary of the Media Foundation for West Africa. They've been very active in calling for freedoms in the media and for information to flow freely. You are welcome to the show this evening.
Thank you very much, Kingsley.
Generally, what is your assessment of the media handling of the bribery allegation?
Well, really, the way the media has gone about this bribery issue, I don't really think is the best. It has just taken the usual trend of MPP versus NDC, where you have clearly some papers or some media organizations that are perceived to be pro-MPP giving credence to the allegation, whereas you have others that are perceived to be pro-NDC also giving credence to the fact that the allegations are just a concoction of certain group of people. But having said that, I think what is worrying is that whichever the case may be, whether the allegations turn out to be true or false, it just clearly demonstrates the extent to which our politicians would want to take people for granted for the sake of power. I'm saying this because if, for example, it turns out not to be true, then the question is, why on earth would some people just sit down to put this thing together for the sake of making political capital? On the other hand, if it turns out to be true, you would wonder why a government minister would want to do this kind of thing just so that the government will have the media on its side. It is important for me to emphasize, however, that everywhere in the world, every government would want to court media support. But for me, it is about how the government goes about doing these kinds of things to get the media on its side. I mean, recently when this phone tapping issue happened in the UK, you had people expressing concern about the relationship between politicians and Rupert Murdoch. I think that people have spoken about Silvio Berlusconi, the way he used his media as an influence to come back to come to power in Italy, and a whole lot of other kinds of media relationships with politicians. So definitely all governments would want to have the media on their side. But then the question is, how do they go about that? This particular thing that happened, if it is true, it is worrying. And if it is not true, it is also worrying.
Well, if it is true, it is worrying. So in this case, you want the middle ground. How do you still strike it very well without necessarily pushing the people into the labyrinth and just saying that they are guilty? And without also quickly dismissing the allegation so that people will say, oh, yes, we know where you are. That is why you want to give it the slant.
I think that first of all, I must say that I am a bit surprised that the MPP, for example, organized a press conference or held a press conference and made mention of some names as the people who were part of this meeting and those who were alleged to be going to be the beneficiaries of this package from government. And all that we've heard is that these people have denied that they were not present in any such meeting. I would have expected these journalists, for example, to go beyond that and to say, well, I mean, this is quite indicting and we would want to take steps to clear our names. But so far, I think it has just remained at the journalists just saying that, well, we were not part of any such meeting, so it is not true. But people would tell you that for journalists, the only thing you have to yourself is your the name that you have and the reputation to it. For example, if tomorrow, I believe, that if we see on, for example, the front page of the New Crusading Guide that Anas writes on bribery tape issue, people would first of all would want to grab the paper even without looking at what the content is, because they believe that if it is Anas writing, then there must be substance to it. What is worrying is that we don't have those kinds of journalists in this country where people will say, well, if it is Mr. A or Mr. B, then we need to read because there must be something to it. All along, for me, today, I wouldn't be surprised if this paper says it is true and this paper says it is not true. I would tell myself, well, that is what I expect from these kinds of papers, because I know this paper is aligned to that and that paper is aligned to this. What I would want to see is some of these issues, it affects the journalism profession in this country, and we as journalists must take it up on ourselves to say, well, this is an issue that we want to investigate to the bottom. Rather, it is important if we have security agencies like the BNI, the CID, and the National Security investigating, but we as journalists, what is it that we are doing? I believe that there is somebody from GBC, Upper East Euro Radio, who is mentioned in this allegation. What are we doing as GBC?
We've already contacted them and they've denied it.
No, but I think that personally, just contacting these journalists and they denying, we shouldn't end there. We can do a lot of enterprising journalism by trying to also take the issues as they are, put them together, analyze them, point out the loopholes, the gaps, and point out the strength that, for example, enhances maybe the argument of one side or the other, so that gradually, then the discussion of the matter is centered on issues rather than being focused on MPP, NDC, and the kinds of insults that we are beginning to have from high-profile personalities, members of parliament, and ministers of state, you know, which is quite unfortunate.
Yeah.
And I think that if we as journalists begin to look at the issues as they are, do critical analysis of the issues, pick them one after the other, weave them together, then people will be compelled to discuss issues rather than discussing personalities and politics.
That's good. You've raised the concerns. That is taking it a step further. The GJ is coming in and the BNI is also being brought in. Is it just good to leave it to these institutions, or you still think that perhaps they are aligned and so you cannot even put some weight on what they come out with?
Well, I don't think that it would be right for us to say the BNI or the GJA, for example, is aligned to one political party or the other.
We are using perhaps. That is for those who want to quickly dismiss it because they've already formed an opinion.
Well, people would always have opinions about certain things, but we mustn't go by what the opinions of people are. I think it is in our own interest to continue to maintain the credibility of the GJA and all national investigative institutions like the BNI. But I'm saying that this is a matter that affects journalists and journalism profession, the journalism profession in Ghana. Tomorrow, if I see a story written by one of those who were named as one of the potential bribe receivers, I tell myself, why should I trust this person? And that is why it is important for the people whose names came up to come out strongly and do whatever it takes to clear their names if indeed the allegations leveled against them are not true. Otherwise, if it is just that a radio station has called me and I've said that it is not true, I don't think that they are doing anything to clear their names. And the impression that they leave is that, well, that thing has happened and we don't expect them to admit that it is true. So we expect them to say it is not true, and they've said that it is not true. And it doesn't, I mean, help their reputation, which is the only thing they have to themselves as journalists.
So the onus is on them now. That is what you are saying.
It is on all of us, Kingsley. I think that as GBC, it will be in the interest of the public and as a public institution for GBC to do in-depth investigations and come up with whatever it finds. I'm not saying that GBC has the potential and the capacity to say that, well, we have come up with this and that is the conclusion. But GBC can go a step further to bring up other issues on the matter that will help investigations that will be conducted by other people. The journalists who were named have a responsibility to clear themselves if indeed it is not true. And then the national investigative institutions also have a responsibility to serve the public interest by investigating the issues and coming up with whatever the truth is. And as I said, whether it is true or not, it really shows the extent to which our politicians would want to take Ghanaians for granted, you know, for the sake of power.
Okay.
If it is true, then it shows the extent to which the NDC would want to go in misusing state resources. And if it is not true, it also shows the extent to which, I mean, the MPP for that matter, would also, I mean, the extent to which it want to go just for political power. So it is important that this particular issue is properly investigated. It involves journalistic scandal. There is also a potential political scandal, depending on what the truth will be.
Okay. It's a pleasure talking to you always. Slimane Abraimo.
Thank you very much, Kingsley.
Thank you so much. That's the Deputy Executive Secretary of the Media Foundation for West Africa on the line. We have two quick tests coming in relation to this one. Politics of insults will not get us good water, good roads, and electricity. We need peace and unity in our dear nation. Allah save Madagana, Aziz Donla from Wa, and Frank from Wayarifa. Kingsley, it's clear that just 2.5 years of the MPP in opposition, they are tired and doing everything dubious to win the 2012 election. And Tremankuma from Kentampo, insulting elders or leaders in our societies is a sign of immaturity of the person. Badu K. Joseph, you are sending it from Kentampo. NDC is also defending the indefensible. Bribery will be major tool in 2012. Sham from Yendi. And what? Bribing journalists, MPP must learn the art of propaganda war. Positive propaganda influences people positively. So far, MPP propaganda has been disappointing. Kojo Akins from Cape Coast sent in that one. Behind the news on Radio Ghana, linking up with all our regional FM stations. A quick break, and we'll be back with other issues that really will help build our nation's science and technology. Behind the news on Radio Ghana, and we move on with the issue of science and technology. In recognition of the role that science and technology plays in accelerating national development, the Ministry of Environment, Science and Technology and other stakeholders last week organized the first Science Congress to deliberate on how to make science and technology the foundation for Ghana's future development. Some scientists, researchers and institutions were rewarded for their contribution at the end of the Congress. The government on its part reiterated its commitment to invest in science and technology, research and development. The Vice President, John Mahama, at the closing ceremony of the Science Congress said the government has secured loans from the World Bank to help achieve this objective. Critics, however, contend that since 1957, successive governments have made such commitments and yet science and technology has not created the needed impact. How different is the NDC government going to make its vision for science and technology a reality? Behind the News discusses this and other related issues with the Minister of Environment, Science and Technology, who joined us in the studio, Ms. Sherry Aite. A warmly welcome to Behind the News.
Thank you.
Yes, certainly many people who were in the scientific area were very happy that this Congress came on. Your total assessment of it before we even start looking at the individual issues?
Well, I think that it was rightly said that since 1957, we've actually not given due recognition to science and technology. It has always been a lip service, you know. So I think from the assessments of the science, the first Ghana Science Congress after, you know, independence, I can tell you that, you know, it was quite promising. Our scientists are very happy that they have received government recognition, and their contribution to the national development agenda has also been recognized.
We keep talking about the fact that from independence we've given some lip service, but others say just after independence we had a thrust towards it. Where did we lose it?
Yeah, we lost it if you have to consider the several military interventions in our government, you know, because sometimes it takes the leader. You know, leadership will always promote their vision. And the late Dr. Kwame Nkrumah, you know, was really a visionary. He had a scientific vision. He wanted to transform Ghana into a middle income, you know, status by using science technology as a driving force. And you can see the several of his programs, his projects, you know, a lot of industries were established. We had Akosomo to provide, you know, energy. And so many things that, you know, under the, you know, founder of this republic, you know, Dr. Nkrumah, you know, initiated. But immediately, we have the first, you know, military intervention. Mm-hmm. That vision was lost. And successive governments, you know, could not, you know, continue with that vision.
Yeah.
So even in certain cases, we set up the Ministry of Science, Technology, other governments came and they thought that that ministry should be dissolved. And now we have a new visionary, His Excellency Professor John Evans Atamos, who re-established the Ministry of Environment, Science and Technology. And we think that we can continue where Dr. Nkrumah left it.
Yeah, so but looking at it, would you say that then that the Congress is coming a little late with the abrupt truncation of some of the projects towards our scientific development?
I don't think it's late. You know, it's awakening. And we believe that with the enthusiasm, you know, demonstrated, we can catch up where we lost time.
Enthusiasm?
Yes.
Where is that one going to come from?
You know, from scientists and from the general public. Mm-hmm. You know, scientists, you know, actually participated very well in the, you know, lectures. Certain, you know, recommendations have been made to government. You know, we selected environment, water and sanitation. And government is going to look at all these recommendations to improve on waste management and also on the environment. And I think at the next Congress we'll also take a new theme. And I think that the whole issue of using science and technology is to have a paradigm shift in our development agenda. You know, since independence, we, you know, our economy has been, you know, monolithic. It's either export of cocoa or export of timber or export of gold.
Yeah.
That is all. But now if you look at the growing population, you look at the youth, you know, it means that we need to have a paradigm shift. We have to look internally, you know, and then create jobs. And science and technology can be used to create jobs,
yeah,
you know, in alternative economy. food processing, agriculture, you know, ICT now is providing lots of jobs, you know. So that is why I think that it's not too late. The Congress has brought on a lot of ideas, and everybody has embraced it. And I think that we could move ahead in the right direction.
Some of the scientists we talked to also raised the fact that, even before the Congress, they have been doing things in their own corners, but the necessary support to be able to move it further has been a big problem. Are we saying that with the Congress, we are now going to get that support?
Yeah. Last year, we launched the National Science Technology Innovation Policy, and we have also developed the implementation strategy for the Science Technology Innovation Policy. One of the critical areas that we have considered is setting up a Science Technology Innovation Fund, and this fund will be managed by a board of directors, and then it will have a fund manager. And as government, you know, the president said and reiterated by His Excellency the Vice President, that 1% of GDP will be allocated to science and technology, you know, and this actually will be seed money into the fund, and it will be used to support research activities, and then it will be used to support innovators and inventors. And I mean, when we believe that a certain research needs commercial support, you know, we will do that, you know, because it will be an independent fund management team that will handle it. And also, we are trying also to ask the private sector to partner with government to drive new innovation and new inventions.
When you mention 1%, for someone listening, it appears so minute, even though we say we are trying to go towards what has been recommended at the sub-regional level. But you've now clarified that it will be seed money. Do we really expect that people will be buying into it and also contributing to that fund?
Definitely. I think this is government contribution, and we will also expect the private sector also to partner with government, you know, to push research development into our national development agenda. Because, you know, you take a, and I can give you a simple, you know, example. Take a product like cocoa, cocoa or gold. I mean, we mine gold, we export raw gold, you know, but then if we process gold locally, you know, value addition, and we export, we get a lot of money, and then we create jobs.
That's what we've spoken about this when we were young.
So that is why, that is it. That is why you can remember those days our grandparents were goldsmiths.
Yeah.
They were producing jewelry, beautiful ones. We've lost that trade. You know, so when we start implementing this SIT policy, Science, Technology, Innovation Fund, we can go back and train young people, you know, to learn the art and skill in jewelry. You know, so that is where we would invite the private sector to team up with us. If you look at cocoa, you know, exporting cocoa, raw beans, you know, you can decide that I will export about 40% and I will process 60%, you know, locally, and will expand the industry and produce jobs.
Yeah, we are talking about the private sector, and in the past we used to trumpet it, even now we still do it. It's the engine of growth. What are they seeing to act as an attraction for them to come in?
Good policies, you know, tax incentives, you know, tax holidays. You know, so these are some of the things that I think that the government has.
Are they getting a tax holiday if they are investing in the science area?
Yeah,
is it a clear policy there?
No, you see, now you have to develop your policy. You know, we are saying that, look, now we finished with the Science Technology Innovation Policy. Now we're going to develop the implementation strategy.
Okay.
So if we want to get more private sectors, you know, direct investment into science, technology, post-harvest losses in agriculture, in food processing, then we can come out, you know, with a memo to cabinet for consideration that companies that will come into the country and invest directly into food processing and in the rural areas, you know, should be considered for certain tax, tax you know, holidays and also tax paybacks, you know, on their profit. So, you know, this is the beginning.
Okay.
And, you know, we've had a lot of consultations, and we think that, I mean, if we collaborate with Association of Ghana Industries and other private sectors, we'll be able to advise, you know, so that proper measures are put in place to attract, you know, investors into food processing and also other sectors of the economy that will utilize science, technology.
Anyway, if you've just started listening, we are talking to Madam Sherry Aite, Minister of Environment, Science and Technology. We are looking at what came out of the first National Science Congress and how we can take it further to advance the cause of this country. Madam, coming back to some of the issues you've just raised, people observing and we want things to really go well, we'll say that sometimes our being is the fact that between the last word and action is a wide gulf. We finished the Science Congress already. It is racing towards the next one if we say we will have one next year. What steps have we put in place immediately to ensure that at least this is what came out of the Science Congress? We've already started implementing.
Yeah, we have established, you know, a project unit within the Ministry of Environment, Science and Technology. At the close of the Congress, you know, we identified five key areas that we're going to support financially, from research into pilot, you know, scale. And we, you know, identified a company in waste management, recycling, that we think that we should support. We looked at the research from Kumasi Polytechnic that we really support us in our fight against deforestation, you know. And then we looked at also waste management, you know, disposal of sewage, liquid sewage, you know, which is actually also engulfing the urban cities. And we looked at the handicapped, you know, that we think that the handicapped also, you know, had their exhibition, and we were very satisfied, and we think that we should be able to go in and help them. And then research, you know, in one of the food CSR institutions. So we have already, you know, assembled our project unit, and we have identified these four areas that we think that we will support and let them grow into a commercial status.
Did you put timelines to some of the things you want to do so that naturally for we who will be following will say, okay, by this time, this is what has been done. We want to see exactly how it is improving the life in one way or the other.
Yes. We, the timeline is the next Congress will be 2013. And I mean, today we established a project unit, and we're going to put all this by October, November. You know, every activity will be within the, our own, you know, budget for 2012, and then definitely by the middle of 2012, you know, you will see that these selected programs have been financially supported, and we can, you know, definitely report something before 2013, because you see, we need to demonstrate our commitment that when we see you and we think that you have a national value, we are going to support you and let you into commercialization. You know, then we take on another group and then support.
Something important from your words: we see you and we think you have national value. And one of the people who has got that national value is now on the line. We want to quickly go to him. We'll come back to you in a jiffy. Colonel Kofi Abaka Jackson is an inventor of 21 technologies in the field of energy and doing so much and also talking about it. Colonel, you are welcome to Behind the News. Hello, Colonel.
Oh, hello.
Yes, you are welcome to Behind the News.
Thank you.
Yes, generally, I know for some of you, the Science Congress was coming at the time that you were calling for some action, a thrust of some sort. What is your main assessment of it?
I think it's wonderful, except that I didn't attend. I didn't attend, but I was invited for an award. And I think it's a very good idea, because we haven't been serious with science and technology.
Yeah.
We haven't been at all. You see, If you go back to the meaning of science and technology, then it will help us steer all the way to whatever goal we want. Science is derived from scientia. I'm not a Latin scholar, but I think scientia meaning knowledge. So knowledge, science is knowledge. So the science and technology you are talking about is knowledge that can be applied in life. And technology is the practical application of knowledge. So we shouldn't be scared about technology. When you talk about technology, I think about, say, computer, which I know nothing about. I think of a mobile phone, which I don't know much about. And I'm scared that technology is something wonderful. Technology is very simple. Everything that you do with your knowledge is technology.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, as a nation, we haven't really pursued science and technology. Let's start from Nkrumah's time. Dr. Nkrumah set a template. In fact, at the time he came, we were mostly illiterate. We were not going to school. And he brought in measures to make everybody go to school. Then he could see that that won't bring us anything. That won't take us further. So he had in place trade schools, technical schools, whatever you may call them. He had them all over the place so that from what we could say JSS level, you could enter a trade school and come out after 3 years as an educated artisan. Educated artisan. These are people who have been given training on top of their local education and given skills to perform. And anybody who gets education and then trade or scientific knowledge and practical application of that, we call that person a human capital. You can invest in this person.
Yeah. So can I just say? Hello, can you hear me?
Hello.
Let me come back to you. Talking about the human capital, at this moment that we are calling for improvement in the area, do you think we have so many, or perhaps this is the time that we need to even start helping others to get into the area?
No, we don't have many. I will explain why. Up to about the year 2000-2005, our population was increasing by about 600,000 children a year.
Mm-hmm.
And out of that, only 300,000 went to school. Out of the 300 that went to school, at JSS level, 200,000 dropped at the age of 15. And 100,000 went to SS. After SS, the universities took about 30,000. So about 70,000 of the 19-year-old graduates with a lot of knowledge just came out with nothing. And therefore, going by this scale, you can see that we don't really have many of them.
Yeah.
We don't really have many of them. If you take any trade, look at it very carefully. Look at the people who are in. You may find that they've been trained at the roadside. They don't have technical explanation of whatever they do. They don't have scientific understanding. So we don't really have it. I'm not saying that we don't have people who can work. We have people with knowledge and skill who can work.
Yeah. Talking about yourself, you have 21 inventions in technology. Can you tell us one or two, the very major ones you have?
Okay, before I do that, I have a small comment on the general situation. You see, our universities, all the establishments that we have good scientists, people with lots of knowledge, they work hard, they come up with what I would say, inventions. But because there's no support, they can't just do anything about them. For example, if you invent something and you don't have money to apply for patent,
mm-hmm.
it just drops. So you can say that maybe our professors are not doing much. They are doing a lot,
mm-hmm.
only they don't have the chance to come out properly. I have set up my own research research company,
mm-hmm.
and we search for how to make energy conversion technologies more efficient and less polluting. And in the process, we've come up with 21 inventions. So far, I'm on the 22nd one, it doesn't come out yet. The two that
I don't know which two. They're all very exciting, but there are two I'm very much interested in.
Mm-hmm.
One technology is for producing electricity. That's steam turbine technology.
Uh-huh.
Today's steam turbine engines supply 80% of the world's electricity. And we have come up with a steam turbine engine which is twice as efficient as today's one.
Mm-hmm.
So if our technology is adopted and the country is producing X quantity of electricity, or let's say 80% of whatever is producing, will be produced at no extra cost in fuel.
Okay.
And therefore at no extra cost in generation of greenhouse gases.
Okay.
This will give the developed nations technology to be able to reduce their greenhouse gases tremendously. For example, if you double the efficiency at the electricity generation, there will be so much surplus clean electricity on their hands.
Mm-hmm.
And therefore, that electricity can power industries.
Okay.
And
can I just in? You've mentioned one very important thing, because energy is something that is so important for this country at this moment that we are talking about industrial development. But I want to thank you very much, because we've not finished with these discussions. Since we have a year as we prepare between now and the next one to assess the progress made, we'll come back to you on some of these other inventions that you have. But I want to thank you very much. Colonel Kofi Abubakar Jackson is an inventor, and we were just speaking to him. But we still have the Minister of Environment, Science and Technology with us. Madam Sheri Aiti, you heard this person. He's been around since Nkrumah's time, and talking about the fact that they need support. And it's mentioned something also very important, especially where we talk about energy. How do we support such ones? Target them directly.
Thank you very much. I was listening to him. You know, I think it's a question of coordination.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because, I mean, for such an invention, he should have taken an opportunity to, you know, have an exhibition at the Science Congress. But it's unfortunate he did not exhibit his invention. But I mean, if you look at energy, we have a Ministry of Energy.
Mm-hmm.
And then we also have the Energy Commission. And then we also have the Ministry of Environment, Science and Technology. So I believe that certain information, if it is provided to the Ministry of Energy, to even to all these three, you know, institutions, the Ministry of Science and Technology, Ministry of Energy, and then the Energy Commission, I'm sure that, you know, they will look at it, consider it, and maybe try it in one area. You know, because when you have an invention, mm-hmm. you must also look at the cost of technology.
Yeah.
You know, so you move in first into a pilot scheme. You know, you can select an area and try it. And then when it becomes successful, then you go wider and look for, you know, financial support, you know, to then produce it, you know, on a larger scale.
It's mentioned something that is so important, that is education. And talking about the fact that we don't have people, even though we say, oh, we have so many scientists doing research. But given the figures, we know that there are people who can still be trained. What are we going to do to ensure that at least those coming out, we give them that capacity?
Yeah, that is why since last year, the Ministry of Environment, Science and Technology, we established a scholarship scheme, you know, which we call it the Masters. And this scholarship scheme is actually targeted to brilliant students, you know, from needy communities, needy homes. And we support them with scholarships to study mathematics and science. And last year, we actually awarded 5,000 scholarships.
Mm-hmm.
And this year, we'll also do an additional of about 1,500. So at least this will solve this gap of not encouraging more people to study science, mathematics.
Yeah.
And they will be looked after for, you know, JSS, and then good ones will be sponsored to university levels.
Selected ones.
And in addition,
yeah.
also, we have, because he talked about, you know, those dropouts.
Mm-hmm.
So we have received, sponsorship from the World Bank, you know, to for vocational skill training of about $70 million to train the youth in vocational skills. you know, and they will be supported after their training with small grants that will allow them to be self-employed. So I think these are some of the initial, you know, programs that we have, you know, started, you know,
yes.
At least we believe that we'll be going somewhere.
When we talk about these ones, we are talking about the selected ones who will be supported and all, and it is a good thing to start with. But others are also raising concern that even in the science institutions, we are raising the grades so that it cuts off a lot of people at a point that we should rather be encouraging them to enter. And one of the people who raised that issue in relation to education and all, Professor Adem Mensah, he's on the line, and we just want to speak to him, and then we'll get back to you in the studio. Good evening, Prof, and welcome to Behind the News.
Good evening.
Yes, back on the issues of the science and the progress that we really need to make. At the end of the Congress, what is your final assessment of how it is going to move the agenda forward?
Well, I'm highly encouraged about what has happened in the last week. Some of us have been crying over science and technology and innovation and education, science education, for quite a long time. It looks as if our voice is now beginning to be heard, and I'm very much encouraged. I hope that with what happened last week, we're now going to see real action plans coming into effect to move us forward.
Yeah. Speaking to the minister in the studio, we've got to know that there are action points being worked on immediately. Left for you, what would be one of the very major things that we need to use as a launching pad immediately?
Well, I agree with the minister that there are certain actions being implemented behind the scenes. Because I happen to know that for the first time in his, well, I wouldn't say in history, but for a very long time, we haven't had any science and technology direct input into our policy issues. But now I know that the National Development Planning Commission has a subcommittee on science, technology and innovation, which is going to make sure that every ministry, you know, science and technology cuts across all facets, health, education, agriculture, industry, everywhere you go, you get science and technology. So they have this subcommittee which is going to make sure that every developmental process that takes place in every ministry has a science and technology input, and this is properly monitored. But coming back to the training aspect,
yes,
you know, we still have not got anywhere near the critical mass of scientists, technologists and middle level manpower that this country needs to have a real takeoff. So we really have to look seriously at meeting our targets for manpower development.
What is that critical mass?
You know, there have been several figures given during various studies. Just this morning I was looking at the financial input, for example.
Mm-hmm.
The minister has mentioned something about putting in about 1% of our GDP into S&T and innovation in this country. The highest we have gone so far, that was in 1987, was about 0.7% of our GDP. We have hovered around 0.1, 0.2, 0.3 for a very long time. So all along, we've been operating far below the minimum capacity that is supposed to take us forward in our developmental process.
Yeah. You raised one critical issue that is very important, and once we have the minister here, we'll see exactly how we are going to resolve it. The reduction of the numbers, even in an institution like KNUST, where we are having a reduction of those who are supposed to go into the sciences, what do you suggest should be done?
Yeah, for a very long time, this country has had certain norms set for various training institutions. For example, when Kwame Nkrumah University of Science and Technology was set up, it was supposed to be, by and large, a science and technology institution. We are informed that the norm was to have about 90% science-based courses and 10% humanities-based courses. And even the humanities-based courses were supposed to be courses that will augment the science and technology training. That's why there was a legal section a section for sociology, a section for management, you know. University of Ghana was supposed to have 60% science, 40% humanities. And our polytechnics were supposed to have about 70% science, 30% humanities. Over the years, we've been aspiring to try and reach these norms. But in the last few years, what we've seen is that there's rather a trend downwards. KNUST, about 10 years ago, was about 71% science to about 29% humanities. Now they are about 59% science students to 41% humanities. So you begin to ask yourself, is that university turning into a liberal arts university instead of a science and technology university? University of Ghana has never got to even 50-50. I know that they've started some new science-based courses, which are expected to raise these figures. But the polytechnics are what worry me too much. You know, instead of the science, 70% science, we now have our polytechnics where we are supposed to train our middle-level manpower, operating at around 40% science to 60% humanities.
Prof, you are talking about...
We get the middle-level manpower that is going to assist in the scientific and technological takeoff that we are all looking for.
These are the questions we'll be exploring in another forum, but for now I want to thank you very much. The more we bring them up, the more we try to find effective solutions. Thank you so much, Professor Ivan Ademensa. Professor Ivan Ademensa is the immediate past vice chairman of the Ghana Academy of Arts and Sciences, vice president of the Ghana Academy of Arts and Sciences for the science section. But, madam, we've heard some of the challenges we are confronted with, even as we try to make a forward movement. How are you going to incorporate some of these that may not immediately be on the paper?
Thank you very much. I heard Professor Diamond, you know, I think I remember very well that those days, you know, universities and the National Planning Commission development, the National Planning Commission, NDPC, they work hand in hand. You know, for example, now government says that agriculture is going to be the backbone of the economy.
In spite of oil.
In spite of oil. You know, then what do you do? Well, you look at, you know, the areas of agriculture that you need to promote. You know, you need improved seedling. You know, you need, you know, agricultural engineering. You know, you want to promote irrigation. You want to, to promote sustainable development, you know, post-harvest, you know, losses, you know, good storage facilities. So when you look at this area, and you know that at least your economy is going to be dependent of about 55% on the area in agriculture, then you work out your training program, manpower needs, because you will need agricultural engineers. You need research into improved seedling. You need research into soil, you know, fertility. You know, you need research into irrigation, you know, food processing, food storage. Then that actually informs you of the caliber of manpower that you will need for the next 10 to 15 years to drive your economy. But this is, you know, I don't know whether it's being done. You know, and it is very serious when you said that even the University of Science and Technology, I mean, now they are introducing subjects like law and they have more art subjects instead of concentrating on science and technology. So I think all these collaborative, you know, efforts that we're trying to drive at, and now with the tertiary educational authorities, polytechnics, we will continue talking, you know, as government, you know, and then find a better solution to drive this.
It may be difficult, but let me still ask. We are talking about the fact that we've not been able to hit the 1% you are talking about. That is where we want to get to. But some are asking, with the oil find and some proceeds from there, can we even target 2% to hasten the process?
You know, since they were getting points, this thing was an AU decision in 1980. And I think the government at that time paid, you know, only once or twice.
Yeah.
And since then, nothing has paid, you know, has been paid into the kitty. But now, you know, Professor Johnny Van Satamu says his government is committed to pay this 1%. So next year, we're getting 1%. And then we can, you know, it's an AU decision. Like, this is the minimal you can contribute. But you can go out because Japan contributes 5%.
And Ghana can perhaps
of their GDP
aim at 10%. So
of course,
that
oh, sure. When the, you know, budget grows bigger and bigger, we can increase it.
Let me ask, are you bringing in politicians from all divides so that no matter where it is, everybody is lending support to this national cause?
Science, technology cuts across political divide for national development.
So you have everybody on board?
Everybody. This is Ghana. It's our dear country. It's our dear motherland. We must all come on board and make sure that the country progresses for the sake of our children.
Was this something you would have loved to handle differently with this past Congress?
I mean, this is the beginning. And in fact, you know, we enjoy the support of every Ghanaian scientist.
Yeah.
You know, to make this Congress a success. And I think that we are very proud of Ghanaians, our scientists, and even those who are not scientists also contribute, because when you look at the marketing aspects, you know, we had experts in marketing. When you look at the hospitality side, we had people who support, and then even the media. And the media gave us a lot of support, and we want to thank everybody. And we hope that in 2012 it's going to be much bigger than this.
That is our hope too, that everybody will remain committed to efforts that will help ensure development in the long run. Behind the news, and we've had in the studio with us Madam Sherry Aite, Minister for Environment, Science and Technology. We have some of your tests here before we go. We as a nation have not developed because we don't value science and technology. If we don't take steps to regularize the HND, then forget it. Usman from Navrongo is sending in that one. And in relation to the first story we had, MPP and Anakumia are so mad desperate for power. So what they could do is to come up with a tape recording. Oh, why? David from Ho is asking that question. AU Farouk, you are saying MPP, enough is enough. The politics of insults must stop. And then Mark and Tampo, why is politics of insults taking our time? It should have been used to discuss developmental issues in the country. Shame on to politicians who engage in that, who think they can get to power through insults. And Sena Pokwasi, where is the 20% salary motivation for science and math teachers in remote areas of the country? Politicians do not live up to their word. That is what they say. Would you like to give a quick comment on that particular one before we go?
Well,
20% salary motivation for science and math teachers in remote areas.
I think that it will be for consideration.
It will be for consideration.
We will liaise with Ministry of Education on that.
So now we push your message forward, and we'll be trying to follow up for you to get an appropriate response. But Madam, thank you so much for joining us on the program tonight.
Thank you.
On behalf of my production team, Christopher Esidu, Edmond Tete, Bright Agama, and the rest of the big team behind us, my name is Kingsley Avintre.